aware of what you make me feel, baby? Right now, I feel invisible to you. Like I'm not real. Eel, eel. Didn't you hear my latest episode of Columbia House Party? Why'd you turn away? Jake, what's up, man?
I like the eel there. That was a good look.
Yeah.
I like it.
It's a great song. Great line. Great opening to an album. It'd be a great episode.
We're going to talk a lot of good opening lines today.
Sure. How you doing, man?
I'm okay. I'm tired, but to quote the great CanCon band Len, I'm feeling all right.
Yeah, you sure are. Anyway, we're not talking about Len today, unfortunately. Anyway, Jake, I'm fine. Thanks for asking.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, man. How are you?
I'm fine. I am fine. That's really just my answer. I just got back from donating blood. So,
good for you,
my energy might drop off after a little bit, but I got some free cookies in me.
I was going to say, did you get a good cookie?
Yeah, a bag of bad cookies is worth it to just sit there and give a little blood, you know?
Yeah.
All right. We should talk about music, right?
I think so. That's what people are here to hear. I don't think they're here to listen to us banter like idiots.
I don't know.
Maybe they are.
This is like, 30% of the podcast.
That's true. Well, if you'd like to hear us banter more, tune in for Columbia House Party catch-ups coming every Thursday.
Please don't commit us to more.
Oh, I have no interest in more content.
Now, if you're listening to this, thank you for listening. First of all, thank you if you've been along with us since the start, and welcome. If you're a newer listener, please rate, review, all that good stuff. A warning, if you leave a 3-star review, the next review will apparently chirp your 3-star review. So tread lightly. Ones and fives only, people.
I like that you're encouraging 1-star reviews.
I mean, look, it's how ratings work. No, very infrequently do people rate in the middle. I would be very curious to see what the volume on iTunes ratings is of like how many people gave something a 2 or a 4. Like, I feel like everyone must just go 1, 3, or 5, right? I hate it. I like it.
I think so. I feel like if you give 2 or 4, you have to like go into detail why and like who has the time.
Yeah. Our listeners, hopefully. So if you do have the time, it takes like 4 seconds to go. And Jake doesn't have 4 seconds.
Only 1, 3s, and 5s.
Yes. Only 1s and 5s here at Columbia House Party. All right, Jake.
Let's get it. Let's do this goddamn episode.
Yeah. All right. So today we move just a little further down the 401 on my drive from Cambridge to Kingston all through university. We have passed Ajax. We're now seeing signs for Napanee. Jake, what do you got for us today?
Today we're doing one of those artists that I don't really have a personal connection with. I think she's just as ubiquitous and important to this era as a band like Sum 41 or anybody else, and also is like arguably the most successful artist of this era to come out of Canada. And so I think it behooves us, or as we like to say, it insists upon us to cover this artist. So today we are talking about the one and only Avril Lavigne's debut album, Let Go.
I'm standing on the bridge, I'm waiting in the dark. I thought that you'd be here by now. There's nothing but the rain, no footsteps on the ground. I'm listening, but there's no sound. Isn't anyone trying to find me? Won't somebody come take me home? It's that damn cold night. Trying to figure out.
So, Jake, this is normally the part of the podcast where I ask you or self-ask myself or ask our guest why we wanted to do this episode. In this case, the answer is that that's what the people voted for. However, why did you want to do this album also?
I mean, I think like I said off the top, it's sort of It's a bigger album than I think I even realized before doing the research for this, in terms of like
bigger in terms of
always kind of okay. in like influence on pop culture and even like super outside my realm, but like on fashion and on and just like in terms of pure record sales. Like, we'll get into this later, but it sold so many fucking copies that I feel like because, like, so many of these artists were sort of in that Canadian bubble of, like, we know it's huge here, but did it have sort of the crossover appeal across nations and borders, especially to the States, which, as we've seen, even with, like, acts that are massive here don't always hit in America, and, like, two-fourths or one half, if my math is correct, of the artists we're doing, in this arc were big successes in Canada and like didn't hit at all in the States. And so I think this album is just, I just had no idea how successful it was because I was like, oh yeah, we all know Complicated and Skater Boy. Like they were huge here, but they were like ridiculously successful in the States as well. And not that success in the States is a measure of like the worth or value of an artist or an album. But I think it's just such a monumental album in the scene and of the time, and definitely in the sort of much music heavy influence and era that we were talking about last week with Sum 41, that it's just impossible to tell this story that we're sort of telling without talking about this album.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I think my connection to it and the reason I want to do it is much more personal than it is, I guess, like cultural or industry. Although obviously that's a huge thing as well. And I have some stuff that I want to talk about later in terms of like exactly how Avril was branded and presented and the way her music went and how like kind of some maybe alternate paths it could have gone down had it been a different moment or a different aesthetic or and things like that. But for me, really, this is one of my favorite albums. It rules. Obviously, as a 16-year-old, when Avril was 17 and this came out, I had a huge crush on her. Me, as like one of the only punkier people at school, to have her get the success level she did and to see Skater Boy lyrics popping up in other people's MSN statuses, which, by the way, this album, first ballot MSN Hall of Fame.
I was curious to ask you this because I think this album came out when I was already in my like shitty faux pretentious mode where I was like, oh, this isn't punk, but also let's listen to Real Big Fish. So I kind of dismissed Avril out of hand when I was like 14, 15. Which is unfair and dumb.
I mean, I think it's kind of the story of Avril, though. And like, I'm sure this is where our conversation is going to end up. But, you know, I look at it now as having done a couple things. I mean, I'll be completely honest, like the Alanis episode, we would have liked to have a female voice on this. But, you know, some of this is going to have to be observation or assumption. But I would think that what Avril did for the scene was add a layer of accessibility, both in terms of, hey, here's a female fronted pop punkish band, but also accessibility in terms of sound, where, you know, Skater Boy is the most punk song on the album, and that's absolutely a pop song. And so I would imagine there are a lot of people who liked the Avril singles, and that was a gateway into checking out more of kind of what she's singing about in Skater Boy. And there's obviously the counter to that, which is, and I don't mean that you did this insidiously, Jake, but I would imagine there was also a lot of kind of gatekeeping that probably skewed toxic at the time, where I absolutely could picture, you know, people in the scene telling people, like, you know, telling women in the scene that Avril's not actually pop punk, and
100%,
or you know, like discrediting the fact that this is a really good album probably only got appreciated in retrospect because it's a 17-year-old with four massive singles.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's also like, I mean, like, not to defend my shitty teenness, but like, I also dismissed Fall Out Boy for the same reasons.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't mean it as like you were. Like,
no.
Meant it from a toxic masculinity standpoint. I think
I think that's probably part of it, even unconsciously, yeah. though.
Yeah, you probably had boys who either didn't want girls in the scene because the scene was a masculine space, or they didn't want to credit female musicians. And, you know, Avril is a little more like it's certainly not a punk album, but I don't think people probably would have been criticizing it like from that critical lens. But yeah, I think it was probably both. There was probably a dose of pop punk gatekeeping and then a dose of, you know, scene. I don't, maybe not misogyny, but scene masculinity that
for sure,
you know, wasn't super welcoming of anyone except for Hayley Williams. And as we'll do in an episode in the future, it's not as if Hayley Williams had an easy time either. She was just so good that it was hard to keep her from being a success.
I think it's also, and we'll get into this a little bit today, but like, this is the era too, where pop was extremely popular. And it was the Britney, Christina, NSYNC era. And Avril, I feel like, was kind of in an unfair spot because she was very obviously positioned by her own taste and very much by her record label as like the anti-Britney, Christina pop star. But at the same time, she was still pop stars, and like the punkers or the gatekeepers or whatever you want to call it had such an aversion to that to begin with that she was still in that world. So she was kind of caught between, and like, maybe this is all in retrospect, I'm not sure, but like kind of caught between two sides of it, of like, you're the answer to people who like pop music and young girls who don't want to just listen to the Britneys and the Christinas, but also you're not punk enough to come into our space. So, you know, I think that was a tough spot for sure.
Yeah, it's, you know, we've talked about how, I mean, we've talked about some of this stuff in other episodes, is what I'm trying to say. Okay, so before we get into the album, I will share more personal things that I have with this album. Is that cool? Is this a place for that?
It's always time for personal Blake stories.
All right. So my second job in high school, I guess my second job ever, if you don't count babysitting and paper routes, was at the Home Hardware at Westgate Plaza in Cambridge. It's the smallest Home Hardware imaginable. It's like six aisles. I was the youngest person who worked there by, I want to say, 30 years. It was just me and some old guys and one old lady just helping people, you know, tell which thread is on the screws that they need to reinstall their blinds. That's pretty. And hey, 16-year-old, can you carry this bag of fertilizer to my car for me? That was pretty much it. One of the weirdest things about that job, by the way, this has nothing to do with where I'm going with Avril, but the parking spot right out front in Westgate Plaza, and anyone from the 519 probably knows exactly what I'm talking about, and everyone else is probably like, shut up. this is not a Jamal Murray podcast, as much as you'd like to make it one, Blake. there was a handicapped parking space directly in front of the Home Hardware. And the amount of times I saw people park there illegally because they were just running into the Shoppers Drug Mart next door, when logically Shoppers Drug Mart is probably the place that people who need the handicap space are going to most often, would drive me nuts.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Avril. Around this time, I broke up with my, what I would call my first like serious high school girlfriend. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't date just for like a week or two and make out at a party. You like actually had feelings and felt something after the breakup. Shout out to Kayla. We did the makeup breakup thing several times. And at this time, Complicated was on the radio. It was inescapable. It got played so much. And the only radio station we were allowed to play at Home Hardware, I forget which one it was. I want to say it was Chime FM, but it was basically like an older, it was targeted more at like 35, like parent age people, but it would have some occasional pop songs on there or like popular songs. Like they'd always be playing Avril and Train and Kings of Leon and those kind of things. So not like, not the absolute worst things to have on when you're working a retail job, but not, certainly not my tastes.
Sure.
Anyway, so Complicated would play endlessly. And I had gotten this girlfriend into Avril Lavigne and a bunch of my music. And I actually think she listens to this podcast. So I hope she's not listening to this exact part and this exact episode, because that'd be awkward. But around the time we broke up, for one of those times, the song Complicated was unavoidable, and the lyrics were frequently in Kayla's MSN status, and it was just like, obviously I was 16 or maybe 17 at that point, so the breakup was not actually that tough, but having to stand there in a Home Hardware helping old people with, you know, paint matching for 8 hours a day as this song played like almost every hour on the hour was torture.
Yeah, I could see that. Jake. I could see that being a heart stabber.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's fine.
I don't know. People have said they like when we share the personal stuff sometimes. And I realize that that's not like an interesting or novel story, but it's exactly what I think of when Complicated goes on. And I can like almost smell what the Home Hardware smelled like when that song comes on. And a Home Hardware doesn't smell particularly great. It smells somehow like sawdust, despite there not being wood cut there and us not selling sawdust. So we're going to talk about Avril Lavigne's Let Go after this. All right, Jake, I need you to carry some of this now. I feel like I overtalked in the setup portion of the podcast. So take us away, man. What do you got for us on Avril?
All right. So Avril Lavigne was born in 1984 in Belleville, Ontario, not Napanee, Ontario, which is a scandal. Her parents recognized her vocal abilities when she was 2 years old, when she was singing Jesus Loves Me in the car on the way home from church. She moved to the greater Napanee area when she was 5, but still... like, they claim her. It's a sign on the Napanee sign. Wasn't born there. I don't know. Seems like there should be a birther. There should be a birther conspiracy. So I'm starting a birther conspiracy about Avril Lavigne. Anyway.
Let's not do that.
Her father recognized her musical ability, and when she was very young, bought her a microphone, drum kit, keyboard, and several guitars, and converted their basement into a studio. She began performing in and around at country fairs, singing songs by The Chicks, Garth Brooks, and Shania Twain. She started writing her own songs as a teen, the first one being called Can't Stop Thinking About You, which was about a teenage crush, as so many of them are. She also won MVP twice as a right winger on her hockey team. So, Avril Lavigne, come on, Sportsfeld.
Yeah, Avril Lavigne, also better at hockey than us.
I mean, most people are better at hockey than me, but that's not here nor there.
Oh, yeah. We'll bring John Cullen back on to talk about that.
In 1999, she won a radio contest to perform with Shania Twain at the Correll Center in Ottawa in front of 20,000 people. They sang the Shania Twain song, What Made You Say That? And at the performance, Lavigne told Shania Twain that she was going to be a famous singer one day, which feels like it would be a scene in the Avril Lavigne Bohemian Rhapsody style biopic that hasn't been made yet. At a performance at a community center, she was spotted by local folk singer Stephen Medd, who invited her to contribute vocals to his 1999 album, Quinte Spirit.
Oh yeah, I'd always make that joke as I drove by Quinte West.
Because
that's the sign on the highway.
Right. There you go. Quinte Spirit. She would also sing two songs on his follow-up in 2000 as well, which I believe is her first like recorded appearance on an album, but I could be wrong. But that was the earliest I could find. Later in 1999, she was discovered by her first manager, Cliff Fabry, while singing country songs at a Chapters bookstore in Kingston, Ontario. RIP Chapters, I miss you, killing time before movies every day.
Also, you're rarely on time, so how would you be there early to
get to kill time in a Chapters. That was like a fun thing to do in high school in Toronto. The Chapters at by the Scotiabank
Theater. Look, one of the saddest times, going back to speaking of our Ontario small towns, Avril and I, one of the saddest things about going back to Kitchener in recent years was the giant Chapters that is adjacent to the big movie theater had moved. In Kitchener, all we had was, you know, you park in the parking lot and on one side of the parking lot is the Chapters you can wander around. And when it got a Starbucks, it was a big, big deal.
Wow. Do you remember what, did you go and like line up for like your first Starbucks order? Was it a big deal?
No. Okay. I didn't drink coffee until university, so.
Fair enough. Anyway, This is a very 1999 sentence. Cliff Fabry would record Avril on VHS and send tapes of her home performances to industry professionals, and she met with several record executives, one of which was a songwriter named Peter Zizzo, who has since worked with Jennifer Lopez, Jason Mraz, Donna Summer, Diana Ross, Clay Aiken, and Vanessa Carlton, and they would write a song together.
Also Jay-Z, wasn't the Zizzo lyric his?
Stop.
How dare you? Sorry. So predictable, eh? I know.
How dare you?
I know.
While working with P to the Zizzo, Avril would write a song with him, which was how she got noticed by Arista Records while on a trip to New York. And that song was called Why.
Why do you always do this to me? Why couldn't you just see it through me? How come you act like this, like you just don't care at all? Do you expect me to believe I was the only one to fall? I can feel you near me, even though you're far away. I can feel you, baby. Why? It's not supposed to hurt this way. I need you more and more each day. It's not supposed to hurt this way. I need you. Tell me. It's not supposed to hurt this way. I need you more and more each day. Together, tell me. You think we could last forever? Tell me why.
Why, Jake?
Because he was a skater boy.
Yeah, can I just say that when I made that bad H to the Zizzo joke, the appropriate response, now knowing that you were going to play that song, was just to give a deep sigh and say why, and then have that song come in. I accidentally set you up and you missed it.
But then the context... Oh, I see. I see what you're doing. Anyway, in November of 2000, she met the head of Arista Records, who we will not discuss because he's a badman, at a recording session. And her 15-minute audition impressed him so that she was signed to a $1.25 million record deal plus an extra $900,000 for publishing in advance. Avril told Phase magazine in 2002 that I started working with these really talented people, but the songs weren't representative of me. They started to talk about having people write for me, but I had to write for myself. I had to do my music. Avril would also say to Billboard in 2018, part of my growth process was learning to speak up. I can play my own shit, the drums, the guitar, the bass, and the piano. This was also around the time that she started cultivating her classic skater image, which apparently was completely legit and not a record company thing, as she hung out with her high school skater clique and also liked skating. However, after signing this very large record deal, she left school to focus on her music, which I think is fair.
Can I just say, in regards to the skater aesthetic, one of my favorite photos of all time is Avril with like a pink streak in her hair against a graffitied wall with a basketball under her arm. Really striking the middle there. It's great.
You're almost there.
Punk basketball. We need a punk basketball to join that indie basketball Instagram account.
That's true. Is that just Steve?
I guess.
Yeah.
No, Rosenstock's a Raptors fan.
That's true. You're right.
Kind of. I guess he's more a Raptors 905 fan.
But. I still want to give Steve punk cred, so I'll take yours more.
Yeah. That would be ska basketball anyway.
Skasketball.
All right.
Sorry. Her band, Avril's band, was chosen by her management firm, wanting to keep the sort of punk thing legitimate. They hired young Canadian punk rockers to back her up. One of those members was Jesse Colburn, who used to play in Closet Monster, and he told Rolling Stone in 2003, "I can totally understand why people would be pissed off at Avril, but it's not her fault. pop punk is in right now, and someone out there thought they could capitalize on it with Avril. You can kind of look punky without listening to punk rock or writing punk rock music, which like is obviously a true statement, but also probably didn't make all the people who were gatekeeping feel any better.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the better way to lean into that, not to tell him what to think or feel at that time, but just be like, yeah, I understand that that's a perspective that's out there, but the music we're going to make, I stand by it. And like, I was in Closet Monster.
Right, so. Exactly. Like there was a little bit of actual cred there, which I think is a smart idea on their part. Avril would then start working with A&R representative Joshua Serubin on much of what would become Let Go. They went to New York and tried to find some co-writers for Avril to work with and try to find her sound. Serubin told Hit Quarters in 2003, it wasn't about what style of music it should be. It was more about finding the right sound for her. That was the only thing that didn't work out initially. She wrote with a couple people and their songs were good, but they just weren't right for her voice. Around this time, Avril started working with Cliff Magness, who gave her a lot of control over the songwriting process. Or, as Avril told Billboard, she told her label, I want, like, more rock music. Which, who doesn't love rock music, am I right, folks?
Yeah, I love rock.
We all love rock music. Her label, however, was not into this idea. As we said earlier, this is the era of Britney and Christina. So they were not pleased with the tracks she was turning in, which were all very heavy on guitar. In May of 2001, she decamped to Los Angeles and began working with the songwriting team known as The Matrix, and they wrote two songs together, one of which would be called a little song called Complicated.
It's all been done before. And if you could only let it be, you would see. I like you the way you are. When we're driving in your car and you're talking to me one-on-one, but you become somebody out round everyone else. You're watching your back like you can't relax. You're trying to be cool, you look like a fool.
Chill out. What you yelling for? What a great track.
Right? A wonderful pop song I have here in my notes.
I think I got to the point of hating it in high school because of experience that I shared before and just like how much it got played. But like a couple months before we decided to do this episode, I fired Let Go back up. And I was actually walking around Drumbo, Ontario and just listening to it. And it was great. And I feel like Complicated's the one song on this album that maybe I had convinced myself wasn't actually that good. And I was like, no, like Losing Grip and I'm With You are the best songs on the album. And then you listen to this back and it's like, oh, yeah, it's if you were going to draw up on your little whiteboard how to make an enormous early to mid 2000s pop hit. That's it. You got a little bit of pop punk to it. You got a little bit of almost like country-ish to it with the way it opens up and the way she twangs at a couple points. And then you have, a pop rock music behind it. So I think it's a pretty well done song. Good on The Matrix for helping Avril nail that down.
As you said, it really combines all those elements of a pop crossover hit, like to the point where it seems like it was super formulaic, but as we'll get into, it wasn't so much. Serubin said of the process of getting her to LA to write Complicated, He said, I knew she was a star and had an incredible voice, and I knew what we wanted to do. It was just that the song never seemed to happen. She'd been writing here in New York with Kurt and Sabel prior to going to Los Angeles, and the songs they wrote, two of which end up on the album, pointed in the right direction. But when Complicated came into the fold, that's when everything came into place. And then Lauren Christie, who was a member of The Matrix, told Sound on Sound that Avril was 16 when we first met her, and she'd been signed to Arista for 2 years. I don't think the label could find the right direction, so our amazing manager Sandy Robertson said, why don't you put her together with The Matrix guys for a couple days? We've been listening to the kind of stuff she was doing. It had a Faith Hill kind of vibe, and as soon as she walked in the door, we knew this was just wrong. The kid had melted toothbrushes up her arm, her hair was in braids, and she wore black skater boots. She didn't seem like the Faith Hill type. After talking to her for about an hour, we cottoned on that she wasn't happy but couldn't quite figure out where to go. That was followed by Avril playing The Matrix a song that, according to The Matrix, kind of sounded like System of a Down, which I am so curious to hear. And I'm wondering if that's just been like twisted over the years and it was actually just like one of the rockier songs this album, but compared to what she was being like pushed towards, in comparison, it sounds like System of a Down, but I'm very curious.
No way. Give me rap rock Avril.
Right? Yeah, I want to hear that. Chrissy continued that what happened was incredibly lucky. Before we formed The Matrix, Scott and Graham were involved in the Doll's Head projects, while my most recent record, Breed, was in a pop rock vein, so we knew exactly what to do with Avril. After that initial meeting, we said, okay, come back tomorrow, and we came up with Complicated and another song, Falling Down. Then when Avril came back in the next day, we played her the material and said, this is where we think we should be going, and she loved it. Chrissy continued in terms of the writing process. The verse we came up with was completely different to the one that ended up on the record. We wrote the whole song and went, you know what? The verse is just not catchy enough. So we came back to the studio and rewrote the verse, and now I love it. To me, it's as hooky as the chorus. I agree. In fact, when we were originally singing the chorus, why do you have to go and make things so complicated? The words just popped out. It was at that point we started thinking about the lyrics and why the song should be called Complicated. However, there is a little bit of controversy surrounding, I don't know if controversy is the right word, but a tiny bit of disagreement on how this song and a lot of the album was written. In a 2003 Rolling Stone cover story, Avril said that her and Christy wrote all the lyrics together while Graham wrote the guitar parts. And Avril said, I'd be like, yeah, I like that, or no, I don't like that. None of these songs aren't for me. When I wrote Complicated, I was feeling what the song talks about, that there are lots of people in the world who are fake, who are two-faced. And when I asked her how long it would take to write that song, she said simply, maybe 2 hours, without equivocation. Songwriting is like that for me. Someone can say, go write a song, and I can do it. I can write a song in a day. The Matrix, however, claimed that they wrote most of the portions of the three singles from the record, Complicated, Skater Boy, and I'm With You. Christy told Rolling Stone in that same article, with those songs, we conceived the ideas on guitar and piano. Avril would come in and sing a few melodies, change a word here or there. She came up with a couple things in Complicated, like instead of take off your stupid clothes, she wanted it to say preppy clothes. Avril was then asked about this further in the same article.
Oh, God.
And didn't deny it, but then pivoted and said the singles are not reflective of who she wants to be as an artist, saying Arista was drop dead shit afraid that I would come out with a whole album sounding like Unwanted and losing grip. I swear they wanted to drop me. I don't feel like Complicated represents me and my ability to write, but without Complicated, I bet you I wouldn't have even sold a million records. The songs I do with The Matrix, yeah, they were good for my first record, but I don't want to be that pop anymore. So we have no idea.
We don't. And honestly, this is like, I think this is something that probably comes up when, I don't want to say like, you know, what's the term that gets thrown around to discredit female pop artists, industry plants or something like that?
Like, yeah, something like that.
Like Avril was like a consciously, it was something that the label consciously worked on to find the right groove at, but it certainly sounds like, and especially based on where she went, that, you know, she did have a hand and influence in this and was like, I can't even imagine being a 17-year-old from small town Ontario going out to LA to record an album and like having people tell you, no, you've got to be this, or like throwing out the Faith Hill comparison just because you can sing a pop country song. And, you know, the fighting for kind of your vision for what your music is. And I mean, to her credit, conceding with a song like Complicated, if she didn't feel like that was, you know, exactly what she wanted to be. But you can tell throughout the album that there are a few moodier tracks and there are a few punkier tracks that I think, you know, if we got a good retelling of how they were written, like, I think, you know, those are probably the more Avril tracks, right? Like, it certainly sounds like at this stage, from everything you just read, it's, you know, Avril wanted a little bit more of a, you know, not punk, because like this wasn't going to be punk, but a bit moodier, a bit more like Losing Grip and I'm With You and Unwanted. And, you know, maybe she conceded on Complicated, and conceded's not the right word because it's a great song and she should be super proud of it. But in terms of what you're saying here with the songwriting back and forth and the label back and forth. Anyway,
the label, despite their reservations, ended up approving of Complicated and chose it to be the lead single. After this, Avril and the Matrix were given carte blanche by the label to come up with whatever they wanted for 10 songs, which took them about 2 months. During the writing of these 10 songs, they came up with another hit. In 2018, Avril told Billboard that the iconic opening line of this song came out of her telling the Matrix, "I was like, if I see a guy walking down the street and he's skateboarding, I automatically will look up and be like, who's that?" Which is very simple. And then the Matrix, of course, turned it into the perfect, and I say that with no shred of irony, literally perfect opening line. "He was a boy, she was a girl. Can I make it any more obvious?" We all know this song. Of course, we are talking about Skater Boy. So the song was written, it was heard, and it was chosen by the label to be the second single. However, this was met by resistance within the label because they felt that it risked being too young sounding and would alienate more quote unquote sophisticated music listeners. However, Terry McBride, who was one of Levine's managers at the network management firm, who also repped such early 2000 artists like Dido, Sarah McLachlan, Sum 41, and Coldplay, insisted that the song was the right choice. He told Entertainment Weekly in 2002, "When we first sat down with Arista over a year ago, most of the staff had only heard Complicated and thought this girl was a pop artist that was going to go up against Michelle Branch. About 20 minutes into the meeting,"
oh yeah,
"seeing that they didn't
can't wait for the Michelle Branch episode, sorry."
It's everywhere. "About 20 minutes into the meeting, seeing that they didn't understand who this girl was, I put on Skater Boy. And after that was finished, they all went, okay, she's actually something completely different." It turned out that she was correct. Outside of the obvious success of these singles and ubiquitousness and quality, the recording process itself was actually quite successful. Scott Spock, who is one of the members of The Matrix and worked as the principal engineer on the album, told Mix Online in 2009 that Avril normally recorded each song in 5 or 6 takes, and probably about 90% of what was used on the album came from first or second takes. However, there was still controversy to be done between Avril and the label. As said earlier when talking about her weird little feud or not, or I don't know what you would call it, with the Matrix, Avril didn't want her sound to be completely guided by this pop direction. She wanted to be more interesting, more rock music, and more like maybe that System of a Down demo that I want to hear. Because of that, her and the Matrix wrote Losing Grip, which ended up being released as the fourth and final single from the record, the third being I'm With You, which we heard off the top of this episode. This song, I think, is really interesting, both from a musical perspective as well as from a marketing perspective. It's obviously a little more rock music than the other three singles, although Skater Boy, as you pointed out, is pretty standard pop punk from that era. But the single CD cover of this album really plays up the like heavy rock angle. It's a picture of Avril and all of her hair is in front of her face. And she's holding a flying V guitar with like a black band t-shirt. And it really looks like she's like mid rock show kind of thing. And it's just like, I found it really interesting in the sense that obviously Avril's image was a big part of Avril Lavigne at this time. And like, you know, the tie with the tank top and all that. But I found it kind of interesting that this side of it was never really played up. Like, she was obviously always presented as more quote unquote rock than other pop stars of this era. But she was never really presented as like actually rock, I feel. And maybe I'm wrong and I just missed it. But like, this really seemed like they were pushing this sort of side of her that I know she went into a little bit on the next record and then would completely abandon. And I don't think has really gone back to since, which is fair because she was a literal child at this point. But I don't know. I just feel like this Avril is a little more interesting to me. And I also think that there's sort of an alternate reality where Avril comes out in like 2016. And this song is sort of what breaks her rather than Complicated. And I kind of feel like if Avril were to come out today, this would probably be more of a direction she'd be allowed to go. And I know allowed's the wrong word, but I feel like she would have been able to put this version of her that she wanted out. And I think that maybe that original Avril that she wanted to be with that sort of heavier rock sound and less of a pop image and sound would have been allowed to be cultivated. And I feel like this song is sort of like, if this came out now, maybe we'd be seeing Avril playing like clubs with Angel Olsen or something. But obviously that's not where we ended up. But that's what this theory sounds like of this song called Losing Grip.
Are you aware of what you make me feel, baby? Right now I feel invisible to you, like I'm much real. Didn't you feel me lock my arms around you? Why'd you turn away? Here's what I have to say.
That song rules.
Yes, it does.
And I'm with you. I think there are a couple tracks on this album that like, and this is one of the more interesting things for me with Avril, where like where she went after this album was, you know, they stayed more or less in the pop lane and then eventually got like really poppy. But like you listen to this album and if you didn't know where she went from there, you could guess a number of different directions. You could say, oh, yeah, like there's a hard lean to like pop folk, maybe even pop country, if she leans into the acoustic stuff and some of the the twangier singing. You could see a lean into like more of a straight pop punk. You could see with songs like Losing Grip and I'm With You and a couple of the non-singles, you could see a moodier, like, I don't know if I'd go Angel Olsen, but like, she definitely could have pivoted into more of kind of traditional singer-songwriter
Evanescence
indie vibe. Yeah, because the talent is there, obviously, and like the, you know, whoever wrote the song, some of these songs are fairly simple, but they're still well-written. There are a couple other, in terms of like which of these singles came out, I feel like had Anything But Ordinary not included that lyric, it could have been a really big single, but I feel like that song with that lyric and that title is too risky to like really, really cement her as like a 17-year-old pop only, like Chime FM kind of act. Like Anything But Ordinary is a good track that gets undercut by its name and that lyric ending the chorus.
It's funny too, because that was the Matrix's original pick for the title of the record. To be Anything But Ordinary.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, obviously, we talked about the gatekeeping stuff and some of the, you know, people not engaging with it because of their preconceptions or whatever. And I feel like Anything But Ordinary is the track on this album that, while good, would have played into that. Mm-hmm. The only other thing I want to point out from this album, because we got to keep it moving and take a break here, is that My World, toward the back of the album, is hilariously like about Napanee and mentions Napanee. And I would like someone to write the Drumbo song next, please.
One day, maybe one day.
Yeah. All right, we're gonna talk a little bit more about this album and how it was received after this. All right, Jake, so how did Let Go do? If I remember right, mild success?
Yeah, a little bit. So Let Go was released on June 4th, 2002 in Canada and the United States, July 22nd worldwide, and August 26th in the UK and Europe. This is a very 2002 sentence. It was also released on Data Play, which was, if you remember, those little tiny cartridges that were like just predating MP3 players. Where you could like download some album, like a bunch of albums onto one tiny cartridge that played in this little player, because Arista, her record label, had a deal with Data Play that included albums of Santana and Whitney Houston. And we've said before, if anyone has this rare picture disc or something from Discogs, let us know. If anyone has a Santana Data Play, please let me know. Avril went on her first headlining tour following the album in 2003, which was very much in her marketing. It was called the Try to Shut Me Up Tour. I'm only mentioning this because the opening acts are amazing. In Europe, Our Lady Peace opened, and in North America, the opening bands on various legs were Autopilot Off, Gob, Simple Plan, and wow. Swollen Members, which is a very early 2000 Much Music tour. She also released a tour DVD called My World, which also included 5 unreleased songs, one of which was Why, which we played earlier. The album was actually, for like a pop-ish album, pretty well received when it was released. It currently has a 68 on Metacritic, which obviously didn't exist when it came out, but it got a 3 out of 5 from Rolling Stone. In that review, Pat Blaschill wrote that the album comes fully loaded with another dozen infectious hymns of total request angst. AllMusic gave it a 3.5 out of 5, saying at her age, one imagines she is still finding her feet, borrowing from the music she's grown up listening to. Got a 4 out of 5 from Blender, a B- from Entertainment Weekly, a 6.6 from Pitchfork, a 3.5 from Q, and a B from Stylus Magazine. Avril would win the Best New Artist Award at the 2002 MTV Music Awards and won a World Music Award for Best Canadian Singer. She received 5 nominations at the 2003 Grammys, including Best New Artist and Best Pop Vocal Album. Complicated and I'm With You were nominated for Song of the Year at the 2003 and 2004 Grammys, respectively. She was also nominated for 6 2003 Junos, winning 4, including Best Album and Best New Artist. The album also won a Guinness World Record for the youngest female with a number one album in the UK. Sales-wise, it debuted at number 8 on the Billboard 200 and peaked at number 2 in 2002. It was the third best-selling album of 2002 in the US, selling 3.9 million copies. It peaked at number one in Australia, Canada, Ireland, New Zealand, Scotland, and in the UK. It would also chart at number five the following year in 2003 on the Billboard 200 and is the 21st best-selling album of the decade in the United States. It went 7 times platinum in Australia, diamond in Canada, 6 times platinum in the UK, and 7 times platinum in the US. And as of 2012, it had sold 16 million copies worldwide, which, damn, I had no idea it was that successful.
That's good for her.
Yeah.
Rich, rich. You could buy a whole, you could buy Napanee.
You could literally buy Napanee. Avril would go on to release Under My Skin in 2004, The Best Damn Thing in 2007, Goodbye Lullaby in 2011, a self-titled record in 2013, and Head Above Water in 2019. The Best Damn Thing, her 2007 record, would see her move away from the rock sound and image and into a more bubblegum pop world. That album, which I have no reason to play other than the fact it's been stuck in my head for 2 days, so now you all have to listen to it too, was the lead single, Girlfriend.
Give me a chorus with a good clap line in it. I'm all over it. My one complaint with you playing Girlfriend is not that it'll be in my head for a couple days now, because it will be, and it's fine because it's a cool song. Shocked you didn't go with the more recent example of where Avril went. Her off of Head Above Water, she has a song called Dumb Blonde with Nicki Minaj that rules and is like way, like, I mean, it's closer to Girlfriend than anything on Let Go, but it's awesome. And I would have guessed that's the song you had queued up.
I actually haven't heard that one, but I do love Nicki Minaj, so I will give that a listen.
Head Above Water is good.
Is it?
Yeah. I didn't listen to a ton of Avril stuff like immediately post Let Go, but I listened to Head Above Water because the lead single was pretty good, and it's good. It's like as far as what you might expect adult Avril to sound like in 2020, I really liked it.
That's cool. Yeah, I get the only other option for what song to pick here was Hello Kitty, and I didn't want to do that to anybody. So, because as happy as I am that she seems to be in a good space and making some cool music, that song doesn't need to exist.
All right. There's a lot of post-Avril and like adjacent Avril stuff we could get into that we're running a little long and we don't really need to get into. I mean, I think the big takeaway here is, first of all, that having 4 singles as big and as good as the first 4 songs on this album is amazing, an amazing accomplishment on its own. And like the fact that I would say at least 3 of them are, I would still argue, are good songs is pretty crazy. And then I think, you know, the layer down from there that we talked about a little earlier is, you know, did she have an effect on accessibility in the pop punk scene, or at least the pop punk aesthetic? And then more so to this arc that we've been on this last month on Columbia House Party. Jake, do you see an impact here on the Canadian music scene? And is Avril, like, is there a gap between accomplishment and credit received here with Avril?
I think so. Like, I'm not sure how much of an impact it had on the scene, so to speak, because it became so big and did sort of become just a massive pop album. I don't know what, I'm just not sure how the impact was seen, but I think the fact that it was like a young Canadian artist that was this successful playing music that didn't sound like a lot of other stuff that was on the radio, which I think kind of goes forgotten, especially in 2020 when like, A, you can just hear whatever you want, whatever, and like that whole concept is gone. Like, I don't think it can be overstated how much or how like quote unquote controversial her stuff was on the radio compared to what else is on the radio for girls at that time. And so I think that had a bigger impact than anything. I think I might be the wrong person to ask this question to. I just feel like I wonder if you talk to a female musician, they might have more of an opinion on like Avril's impact and influence and opening up doors or not, or that. But I just think as a dumb straight guy that I'm probably the wrong person to ask.
You're not that dumb.
I'm pretty dumb. Yeah, like Cassie tells me I'm dumb a lot. I'm dumb, right? Oh, she's nodding. Yeah, I'm dumb.
All right. Let's hear your dumb rankings of the songs on this album then, because we got to pick one for the mixtape.
This one, I'm not going to lie. Like, this one is one of the tougher albums we've had to rank songs on.
It is.
Like, we've had some easy ones. And we've had, this one has, like, a good handful of songs. I think I have to go Skater Boy number one.
Oh.
Because I think it's perfect.
All right.
I think I would go Skater Boy. Then I think I'd go Losing Grip. And then I think I would go Complicated.
Okay. I would go I'm With You, Losing Grip, Skater Boy, Complicated.
Okay.
So I really like I'm With You. I guess the more interesting question, because like those four are going to be your top four in some order, probably. What is your favorite non-single on the album?
Probably either Anything But Ordinary or Unwanted.
Yeah, I think Unwanted's my pick as well. It's just kind of, it's more the vibe, you know?
Yeah, it's just a good song.
Yeah. So we are in kind of disagreement on what's going on.
We are.
The mixtape. So
what was your ranking again, sir? What was your number two and three?
I had I'm With You, Losing Grip, Skater Boy, Complicated. So we're all jumbled up.
Okay.
What do you want to do? Do you think Skater Boy is the most like representative of the conversation in terms of like aesthetic and
I do, but this is our show. And yes. Both of us had Losing Grip at number two.
So do we go Losing Grip?
Losing Grip.
Yeah. I also think that your point about how that song is the one that sounds most like it would fit in today's music scene makes it an interesting choice as well.
Yeah. So let's do that.
All right. Losing Grip's going on the mixtape. If you would like to be a Patreon supporter, patreon.com/Columbia House Party. Failing that, please rate, review, all that good stuff. And please, even if you don't have his at directly, thank producer Dylan, because all of the compliments, all of the first compliments we get about the podcast are all because of Dylan and not because of Jake and myself. Sometimes Sarah and Lauren and our guests.
Yeah, but say, it's Dylan and Sarah.
Yeah, usually it's Dylan. So thank you to producer Dylan. Jake, you got anything else for us before I take us home?
I don't think so.
All right. I think, we got through all your Avril takes, eh?
We did.
This album kicks ass. I will urge people in the Discord. I know some of the Discord listeners are a little younger than I am, so maybe this wasn't a high school album for them. But I am, especially because we weren't able to line up a guest for this one. I would love to hear people's own experience and whether it was kind of a gateway into some pop punk or at least the aesthetic, or if you went the other way and it kind of, you know, you had walls up about it for whatever reason. Guys, thank you so much for listening along.
Hey.